Okay, now I have to let you in on a little secret. Sometimes in the JPR newsroom, when things go well, one of us will say, excellent. And if you've watched a few episodes of the eternal Fox TV primetime cartoon, The Simpsons, you should recognize that delivery. It's Charles Montgomery Burns, generally just Mr. Burns, the scheming rich man who owns the nuclear power plant where Homer Simpson works. Just listen.
And one more thing. You must find the jade monkey before the next full moon.
Actually, sir, we found the jade monkey. It was in your glove compartment.
And the road maps and ice scraper?
They were in there too, sir.
Excellent. It's all falling into place.
That is vintage Mr. Burns, voiced by Harry Shearer, but other people get to play Mr. Burns and the other Simpsons characters, sort of, in the play Mr. Burns, a post-electric play staged by the Oregon Center for the Arts at Southern Oregon University, opening tonight at the Black Swan Theater in downtown Ashland, and here's a taste of that show.
The episode starts with Bart getting letters saying, I'm going to kill you, Bart.
Right! I'm going to kill you, Bart.
Well, yeah, that's the sound from the King Bear soundtrack. That's the...
Oh, yeah!
That is a production from Capitol Stage in Sacramento 2 years ago, but similar material, the same material, being used by the folks at the Oregon Center for the Arts. Michael Hume, a longtime veteran of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, the director of the play in Ashland. Michael, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. Nice to be here.
So help us understand what's going on there. What is with all the wah-wah-wahs?
All right, the wah-wah-wahs. Excuse me, I have a bit of a cold. There are two film versions of a movie called Cape Fear. There was a 1962 version starring Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum, and there was a fairly well-known film score from that movie by a great composer named Bernard Herrmann, who did the Orson Welles' Citizen Kane. He did most of the Hitchcock films. He's a terrific composer. And he wrote the score for Cape Fear, and then Scorsese remade Cape Fear in 1990, and he's such a film buff. Honored the Bernard Herrmann score and used it again. So you have the whole thing about Mr. Burns, a post-electric play, is you could substitute the word, it's post-apocalyptic. So you have a group of young survivors hanging out in around a campfire in the woods in the near future. We kind of think of it as The Walking Dead without the zombies. It's just about survival. And they're sitting around obsessing about this very specific Simpsons episode from the fifth season called Cape Fear, F-E-A-R-E, which is a satire of the Cape Fear films. And they're reminiscing and they're trying to come up with lines and they're trying to reconstruct from memory the whole Simpsons episode, all 25 minutes. And they start quoting remember the score, something's like this, wah, 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 which is the Bernard Herrmann score. So that's what they're reminiscing about in that scene that you just showed.
So this is storytelling essentially around the campfire, the Simpsons moving into something like the folklore we remember, the stories we grew up with as kids in a world in which you can no longer actually see the stories because there's no electricity, no TV, et cetera.
Very much so. Very much so. It's fascinating, this play. It's kind of brilliant in that it's really about really big things based on a little 25 minutes of trivia. A tremendous irony in that way. I mean, you know, it's a three-act play which Anne Washburn constructed, and for the most part nobody writes three-act plays anymore. Mm-hmm. And we only take one intermission. We do two acts as the first act. But by the way, you know, we're in repertory with Mary Zimmerman's Arabian Nights. So we got two shows going on simultaneously down at the Black Swan, down at OSF. And they were both chosen together because that's what they do. They feature the whole nature of storytelling. You know, Arabian Nights is about Scheherazade and the evil wazir, and he's going to cut off her head unless she can tell a great story that interests him. And so she tells 1,001 Arabian stories. And Mr. Burns literally starts out with a bunch of young people sitting around the campfire, as Primordial Man did many years ago, and recounted tales of the hunt. Act one is that's what it is. They're trying to reconstruct a Simpsons episode culturally. Act two is 7 years later. It's the same group of people. They've all aged. We've added a few. They've picked up a few people. They've become a genuine theater troupe. And now they're putting on Simpsons episodes. Now they're, you know, and it becomes about capitalism. It becomes about the ins and outs and the intrigues of a theater company. You know, still trying to survive, still bartering, still hoarding. And their Simpsons episodes become very much like the medieval mystery plays, you know, back in the day in Europe, especially when the guilds would get together and basically put on Bible stories on church steps and on traveling pageant wagons. So that's what they're doing. But they're not only – but because the Simpsons episodes are so competitive, they're working against other theater troupes, they're also putting on semi-erotic commercials about how good life used to be. And they're also putting on chart hits, song mashups from the 80s and 90s. Then Act Three, just so you know, is 75 years later. And that one Simpsons episode has become basically the new religion. So, as I say, it's a very, very smart piece of writing.
Well, when I saw that part of it, that it gets into 75 years in the future, it's essentially turning the Simpsons into the mythology of a future time.
Absolutely. I mean, that, like I say, that's the great irony. I mean, if this group of young people had been sitting around in the woods and maybe, you know, had found a volume of Proust, Swan's Way, or Dante's Inferno, God, you know, let alone Shakespeare's King Lear, you know, it would be a whole different play. But because it's one specific 25-minute episode of The Simpsons that carries on our stories and becomes our mythology in the future. I mean, I think that's awfully smart and very funny.
The episode of The Simpsons is called Cape Fear, with fear with an E on the end. It led to the version of The Simpsons that grew into Mr. Burns, a post-electric play, which will be put on by the Oregon Center for the Arts at Southern Oregon University at the Black Swan in Ashland starting tonight. Michael Hume is the director and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, longtime veteran of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Share Simpsons episodes you'd like to see turned into mythology here with us or something. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned Anne Washburn is the playwright. It's about, I don't know, about 10 years old, maybe not quite?
I think so, maybe not quite 10 years. Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering that within the realm of the time span you have in here, how much opportunity there is for some interpretation within what you've got in the script. I mean, you know, on YouTube you can see all kinds of other productions.
You really
of
can
it.
Now. That's so frightening.
Isn't that weird? You can see everybody's production from high school to college to professional. But you know, masks or makeup, you know, all sorts of things
all
going
of
on here. So what options do you have within that?
Well, off the record, oops. you know, I love coming up to SOU because we get to be very creative. And what I've always done I did it with Little Shop of Horrors a few years ago. We do a little teeny bit of adapting, and the big one is that I always try to add more roles for students, just so that you know more of those guys have a shot at being in a play. Arabian Nights is quite big, and as written, Anne Washburn's play is really only eight people, and then. Then she'll add in two musicians, and we're using 14. Because I think there was a step missing. Sorry, Ms. Washburn. in that, you know, we go from sitting around the campfire, the verbal oral tradition of storytelling, jumping right to the theatricality of it. And to me, I said, there's one step missing, and that's the scribe aspect. So we've added a couple of young women and hopefully fully fleshed them out, you know, fit them into the play, and as opposed to dividing up all the lines, because then it would have just gotten muddy and messy. They're for the most part silent observers to the, you know, the end of civilization, and we watch them pulling out journals and scribbling furiously. They're writing down everything that they're hearing, and that was just for storytelling, you know. So I actually always called Act One scribes. So we've added that. So basically, I've added a number of characters. I cast two very good actors who just happened to play the piano and the drums quite well.
Oh, that helps.
Yes, it does. So we do have a band from within the cast. So that's the only way that we've messed with it. But, you know, in terms, you're absolutely right about masks. 75 years later, this little Mr. Burns, David and Goliath, Luke and Darth Vader, father-son, love versus hate story takes place, and it is all masked. And Anne Washburn says, you know, I'm one of the first places I ever adapted and worked with was by Euripides. So apparently she has a tremendous attraction to ancient Greek theater. And, you know, you put these actors all in white tunics and put masks on them, and it really is like watching a Greek play. And I had no idea that would happen back in the beginning. And all of a sudden, you know, we're in dress rehearsal. And also, Act Three is almost entirely sung, which I'm not a musical guy and don't read music. And I think it took me about 6 weeks to figure out, wait a minute, say, this is a musical. You know, how did I get stuck in this? And with a brilliant musical director, Chris Williams, who teaches voice up at the college.
She's been a guest of the Exchange a few times before. And singing
I've known
for her Johnny Mercer night. Done Savage Rear.
I've known her for 20 years. And she, you know, trained these guys. They're singing it beautifully, and it's all worked out quite well.
Michael Hume, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the director of Mr. Burns, a post-electric play put on by the students at Southern Oregon University at the Black Swan Theater in downtown Ashland. And we should get into that just a bit. I mean, the fact is that the theater building at the Southern Oregon U is being reconstructed, so that's why they're playing, essentially visiting other venues.
Yeah, yeah. I believe it started last year. And for those of you who don't know, the Black Swan was the third performing venue down at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. I believe it opened in 1978. Then we stopped doing public performances in there in 2002 when we opened up the Thomas Theater.
Wow, 15 years.
Yeah, a long time. And beloved space. And you talk to actors who worked at the festival for longer than me, as long as me. We love the Black Swan. You know, it was constant. It sat 142 people, period. It was always small and intimate. We did more cutting-edge plays in there, more recent plays with smaller casts. So I've acted in about 7 plays in there, and I've actually directed 3 plays in there before this. So it's a great little space. And thank you, Oregon Shakespeare Festival, for very generously giving the college that space for the last couple of years. Last year they did Bertolt Brecht's The Resistible Rise of Arturo Uy, which is kind of a gangster version of The Rise of Hitler.
Right.
And, you know, these political times do have parallels. That's when it began. And we're doing 2 shows, as I say, in repertory. So we have 1 set for both plays. It's a tight little space. I mean, I remember, you know, this is a little bathroom and I think their dressing and makeup room is one of the conference rooms at the festival. Mm-hmm. It's quite tight. And we seat 100. We're able to seat 100 people in there.
Any interesting memories for you as a Shakespeare Festival actor who's worked in there? Like, this is the spot where I fell and Vilna's got a golem or something?
Oh, gosh. Funny you should. Yes, many memories. Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I actually directed in there back in 96, a piece called 3 Hotels. Yeah, lots of memories. And the fact that and some of my favorite shows that I ever saw down at the festival were in there, you know, just because of the nature of the space. And also, you know, friendships. You know, the late Catherine Coulson and I became great friends in that space. Vilna Got a Golem, the whole cast bonded for the next 10 years based on that one production, which was quite terrific. So, yeah, let alone teaching workshops in there and giving lectures and Martin Luther King Day and listening to Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech in there in voice classes. It's a great space.
So, Michael Hume, how did you come to the project of Mr. Burns, a post-electric play? You mentioned you had directed on campus before. Had you known much about Anne Washburn's play before you got to this?
Not at all. I mean, I knew it was out there. You know, even though I've been in Ashland for 26 years, you got to keep your thumb on the pulse of American theater, Jeff. So I read American Theater Magazine. You know, you get online and you see and this play called Mr. Burns, a post-electric play, pops up every now and then. And I know it premiered in Washington, D.C. at a place called the Woolly Mammoth Theater. And I know the D.C. theater scene a little bit from having done a couple of shows there. And then that was its premiere. It moved to Playwrights Horizons in New York City, back when I lived there. I performed there. And a member of our acting company for 2 seasons, a very good actress named Susanna Flood, was in it. So followed that, and I knew of the production down at down in Sacramento because their production was featured on the cover of American Theater Magazine. But the school contacted me. They said, we think this is your kind of material. And I went, oh, well, how interesting. And, I'm by no means a Simpsons devotee. I've seen maybe, after 27 years on the air, maybe 30 episodes. And the kids love the Halloween treehouse thing, and we always watch
it.
And, you know, this is not my wife's cup of tea. But for me, I enjoy it. I think it's terrific cultural satire.
I understand, too, that Anne Washburn originally was thinking about other other bits of fairly recent TV that she could turn into something like this, where it was considered what it would be like if it were characterized again in future decades after an apocalypse, including Friends, which was apparently on her list of considerations.
I don't know the list of things that she was looking at, but I do know that a number of options arose in her mind, and The Simpsons is kind of perfect. In that it is the American functional slash dysfunctional family, capitalism. Mr. Burns being the evil ward boss, the evil employer, and also because he runs a nuclear power plant, and basically does become Darth Vader. He becomes, 75 years from now, he becomes the devil. I mean, that is really like a medieval mystery play in which. If you know those plays, and I like them very much, the devil has all the good lines. He always does. Richard III is who you really live. You can't wait for him to come on and kill somebody else. Iago in Othello is an extension of that old medieval devil tradition.
I'm still fascinated by the concept, though, of people getting a hold of The Simpsons 75 years in the future. And again, we're talking to Michael D. Hume, the director of Mr. Burns, a post-electric play going up tonight at the Black Swan Theater in downtown Ashland, put on by the Oregon Center for the Arts at Southern Oregon University. The idea of characters in our time who we watch for basically pure entertainment, although there's some deep stuff. I mean, The Simpsons are always thinking about society at large. But as characterized at the end of the play, 75 years beyond the time when anybody last saw a frame of the show, which raises an interesting challenge, I would think, for both screenplay for playwright and for director, because you're working with students who know The Simpsons as actors, but they can't really know The Simpsons by the time they get to 75 years in the future. Right?
No, and the playwright makes that very clear that there should be no attempt at trying to imitate them, because 75 years in the future, there's no computers, there's no smartphones, there's no television, there's no recordings. I hate to say it, but we cheat that just a little bit because we found a couple of actors who could do it, but without giving too much away. I mean, Act Three is really a spiritual journey. It is actually quite a religious piece. It deals with sacred elements, including the death of the father. And the death of the mother, and the separation, the separation from family for Bart as a young man. I can't believe we're talking about these Joseph Campbell, hero with
Heart
a thousand
faces. Heart of darkness, Bart Simpson.
Absolutely, it just is. It just is. And she gives stage directions, saying we do not play the death of Homer Simpson for laughs, which would be so easy, especially with this really fine actor who's playing that. Terrific actors, by the way. Boy, the colleges cranking out a lot of talent, folks. and they've been a joy to work with. Yes, both of them we could have easily, done a whole Simpsons,
just a whole series of episodes.
Because they can do it, but it's also all sung. So that makes it harder, too.
And on that basis, I noticed some borrowing from some other sources, too, from some of the YouTube clips, like from the Sacramento production. There's a song about The Simpsons where they're singing The Simpsons, but it's clearly the melody to the Flintstones.
Flintstones, absolutely. Well, that's memory. 75 years in the world, they're writing down, they're creating this new sacred theater piece, and they go, oh, I my grandfather told me about this song. That went like this. Da 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 da. That must have been The Simpsons. That must have been, right? There's a kid in the department who's I don't know why I'm doing this. His name is Nick, and he's a wunderkind. He's our sound designer, and we have a somewhat lengthy stage a scene shift out of Act 1 into Act 2, and he basically went up to a bunch of college students and interviewed them. What's your favorite TV show? What's the best thing you've ever watched? So while we're watching, these two scenes transact, from one location to another, and it takes a full minute, you hear all these voices going, oh, I love SpongeBob. Oh, I love, I hate to say it, but shows that I've never even heard of. I'm not much of a TV guy. But a lot of students were there last night at our quote unquote preview, second dress, whatever you want to call it. And they were howling with recognition, while 14 actors are moving a whole bunch of stuff around. So, that's our sound designer, and he's quite bright.
That sounds great. Let's talk about the actors just a little bit more.
Sure.
Because there's the challenge of any show trying to get everybody in the same, you know, pulling in the same direction.
Yeah.
With a dark comedy in particular, though, where you're trying to be funny, but you're trying to make sure that there's an edge to it, too. That must be a trick for younger actors.
Well, it's called creating a tone. And it's really, and yes, it's difficult because they either get it or they don't. And that's a collective thing. And I think this group has. I mean, you know, having had our first audience last night, there was a lot of silence, and good silence, and the laughs that you want to be there are quite strong. But, you know, I mean, we've got everything in this. We've got, you know, unarmed black men getting shot in the back. Semi-automatic weapons going off and taking people down. We've got refugees trying to get across the sea, paying off smiling people, putting them on a life raft. It is dark, but it's dark and it's light, and that's why I keep on going back to this is the smart thing about this play. And sometimes the students can't do that, but this group could. And I used to study with an acting teacher in New York named Uta Hagen, name drop.
Yeah, truly.
Who would tell us, and I was a young actor in her class, she would tell the group, you're trying to play mood. You can't play mood. The director can create mood, but you cannot play mood because mood is doom spelled backwards for the actor. and it's so true. You just give them... You know, acting talk. You give them the verb. You give them the need. Remind them at the last second. I know the play is opening up with this kind of flirtatious reconstruction of this Simpsons episode out on the wood, but you have to assume you just saw something horrible. You just saw a family dead in their car. You saw an animal gnaw its foot off to get out of a trap.
All right, something like that. Yeah, okay, you've raised the stakes a bit, as directors have said before. The show is actually sold out already. That seemed to happen pretty fast, but it is called Mr. Burns, a post-electric play. So it moves from the Simpson characters and outward from there, written by Anne Washburn, directed by Michael Hume, who's been our guest on The Exchange. Best of luck. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff.